Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
For the best in morning radio, tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Friday, November 7th.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charlotte. How are you?
I'm good. I got my car back last night.
Oh, you did?
So I'm so excited.
Wow. What a shocker.
It's a happy Friday.
Wow. How long has it been? 2 months or something?
Yeah. Two months and almost a week. So
does it look good? Like
9 weeks.
Like it did before?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
As long as it drives okay.
What a pretty car I have.
Yeah, huh?
But yeah, it drives fine and I have lifetime warranty. So that's
good for
a huge...
You.
That gave me relief, so.
Yeah. I know, sometimes after body work and stuff, the car is never the same, you know?
Right.
And
I know.
You have to sell it and get something else.
Yeah. And that's definitely a possibility, but I love my car. It's so pretty.
Good. Good. We'll keep
it. Got rid
it
of
then.
That rental car, and now I have my car back.
Yeah.
So I'm happy.
Good. Good. I'm glad for you. Now you don't have to drive that Volkswagen anymore, right? You didn't like it?
I just found it clunky.
Really?
Like, yeah.
What was it, a Jetta?
It wasn't a Jetta. It was a Passat.
Oh,
I thought it was a Jetta, but yeah.
Right.
But it wasn't, I guess.
Okay.
But my car is just so sleek and slender.
Yeah.
And this was just like a blob. So I love my car. I remember I walked into the body shop. I was like, wow, my car is good looking.
Yeah. Huh? Well, good. It's good to like your car.
Yeah. Definitely.
Good for you. Well, congratulations. Now you can feel at home again.
I know. And just like, oh, thank God that's over.
I know. That sucks, man. I've had to do it a couple times. And it's... you know, you take somebody else's car, it's a rental car and stuff, and it just, you don't feel comfortable in it.
No.
You know?
And especially, it's just a nightmare. Like, when it's not your fault, there should be a better system.
Yeah.
And it was just...
That's true.
Now it's over. I feel like a weight's been lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah.
I know.
No more phone calls to State Farm and AAA and, ugh, just happy. Was becoming a daily occurrence to be on hold for 45 minutes.
Calling them and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Why is that?
Because no one would call me and give me answers, and I was having to chase people and find out what's going on. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just terrible.
Well, at least you got some money from the insurance, which is good. You know, we always pay in. It's nice to get money back from them, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to cover repairs and things.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm happy.
Good for you. Well, I'm happy for you, too. If you're happy, I'm happy.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah. So, beautiful Friday outside. It's warm again.
Mm-hmm.
And as though the summer never left.
Yeah.
We're going to have a guest in a few minutes who's going to call in. We're going to talk about some important things, I think. And like assisted suicide and stuff. And that's been in the news.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that. A lot of things going on in the news. Nothing really exciting, but, you know, news is
it's
news, right?
It's all sad. Yeah. Exactly. News is always depressing.
I know. But sometimes it's just funny. I mean, there's a lot of fun things in the news as well.
Yeah.
Which probably should not be fun, but we make fun of them, so.
Right.
Yeah. I guess they give the new Star Wars movie a name. I don't even know what it is. I just saw the headline. Let's see what it says. It's called Star Wars 7. Oh, well, that's what they call it. Star Wars 7, The Force Awakens. Now, is this one going to happen before or after? I think this one happens after. Because you remember how the last three were actually prequels to the original Star Wars.
I haven't seen.
You haven't seen Star Wars?
No, okay. I'm just not a big fan.
Yeah.
So I really
don't
know.
I know, you're not really into science fiction and stuff.
Not really, no.
Yeah.
Not
I know, I've never
movies.
Been. I know, I've never been either, but this movie somehow came out, and the only thing that had existed that was similar was Star Trek, you know?
Yeah.
But before that, there was really nothing like this, you know? And then they came out, it was this huge production, and a lot of stars and actors, and and all the new technology and stuff, you know, I mean, all the animation and the and the models that they made of the spaceships and stuff, that was like unprecedented. So it was a big deal. And of course, a lot of people like it and fell in love with it. They made three movies, then they made another three that were prequels. So I don't know if these are like sequels now or what.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, it's going to be huge. I mean, they're talking about, you know, I don't know when it's going to be done. I wonder. Probably in a year or two, huh?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's just, yeah, they take a while to.
Yeah, because there's a lot of effects and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're talking about Toy Story 4 already coming out in 3 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. But it takes a long time to do animation.
Yeah.
You know, I used to do computer animation too. And I remember it was, but back then that was in the 90s, and the computers were so slow compared to today that it would take forever.
Wow, I bet.
To do those things.
Oh my gosh, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah, you know.
I interned at, I was interning at a different place, and then they let me go to a different company who was like their sister company and work there for a week. And it was with the animation department, and it was really cool, but I just remember thinking, wow, this is.
Yeah.
Intense.
It is.
And
intense.
That was just animation for commercials.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't really.
Yeah, it wasn't that long or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I know. It takes a long time, and that's why these movies take a while to be made.
Yeah.
And, you know, plus, it doesn't matter how fast the computers are, they're still like bringing them to their knees with all this rendering and stuff that they need to do.
Right.
And. It's
Even when you edit just a video or something, the rendering can take so long.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, I'll go get a cup of tea while this while this renders.
I know. And eventually, but you know what? It's a lot more progressed now than it used to be. I mean, we couldn't even run video at full 30 frames a second, not even close, back in 1991 and stuff. I mean, it was. You had to edit video completely differently. Imagine if you couldn't really play video on the computer. You know, today we take it for granted, but you couldn't do it. So you had to like do the editing on a video machine and a tape machine and stuff.
Wow.
You know, yeah, it was a pain in the ass, and you had to lay the frames one by one on the machine. You know,
yikes.
If you can imagine 30 frames a second. You know,
yeah.
So it takes a long time.
Yeah, definitely.
And sometimes I'd come in the morning after it rendered all night. My client was supposed to come in, and it screwed up my entire project. You know, all the rendering was screwed up.
Oh my gosh!
And that would embarrass me to no end when that happened. And that's why I eventually got out of it, because I felt I can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah.
It's making me look like a fool, and these computers are just like they have their own minds, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, enough of this. So I sold it.
Speaking of animation and things like that, I saw an ad this morning. I have no idea where. I don't know if it was on TV, computer, what. But it was, they are releasing games, like old school games, for free to download for apps for kids for the holidays.
Oh.
And I just looked up Pac-Man, and that is available.
Wow.
And that's on iPad too, so I'm sure not all of them are available on iPad. But it's all like the old school games that people did play.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And they're all for free, so I'm trying to. I don't know how to find them, but.
You just go on the App Store, probably.
Yeah, but to find like the old school ones that.
Right. Who knows?
But I thought that was pretty cool that now they're doing it all.
Yeah, they're giving everything away for free. What the hell? How's anybody making money?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing, is that you create so many users and traffic and stuff that you can sell that to advertisers.
Yeah.
And that's usually the business model, you know.
Definitely. And
because
I mean,
people expect not to pay for anything.
Yeah, and when you go on all these games, and I play Scramble, and I've spoken about this before, but now, even just from when I started playing it 2 weeks ago to now, the amount of advertisements that come up now, it's so annoying.
Really?
Yeah, it drives me insane. And you can't, like, click off for, like, 20 seconds, and it's like, well, now I'm not that bothered about playing.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, like with Words with Friends, it used to do that, and it would make me crazy. It would even crash my iPad and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to pay the $4 and get all the ads off, and now it plays great. You know, I don't have to deal with the ads.
Right.
Yeah, and what's $4? You know, it's nothing.
Yeah. That's what I think, but then I'm nervous that when I do it once, then it's like, oh, it's $4 again. And then it's going to be every day. Oh, what's $4?
Yeah, but do you play a lot of games? A lot of different games?
No, okay, I just play Scramble.
Okay, so you see, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but then there's, like, I use photo editing apps and things like that. So then it adds up to,
So they have ads too, these things?
Well, no, but you can just upgrade for like 99 cents. And that's how I feel like once I start, I'll get carried away and won't stop.
Yeah. But still, that's what I'm saying. It's all so cheap, you know. I mean, software used to be so expensive. We talked about it yesterday.
Yeah.
It really used to be expensive. And today you're getting stuff for free. And it's not just on the iPhone and the smartphones and the tablets, but it's on computers too.
Right.
Like full software
mm-hmm.
that you get.
I think I'm going to the movies tonight. And I'm trying to decide what movie to see. Oh,
are you hearing something?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going from one headphone to the other. There we go.
So I was looking up all the different...
Yeah, go on.
I was looking up all the different movies.
Uh-huh.
What? Because you saw Gone Girl and then Blade Runner, right?
No, Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler, that was it. I don't know where I got Blade Runner from. Yeah. Which movie would you recommend out of those two?
Out of those two? Boy, I didn't really like either one of them. No, Nightcrawler is good. Nightcrawler is different, yeah.
See, I really want to see Gone Girl.
Okay, then see it. Maybe you'll like it.
I know, but then I feel like there's better ones.
Then see both.
It's a hard decision what movie you're going to see, because it's a real big commitment when you're spending $15 per ticket. It's like, I'm going to be really disappointed if I don't enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
When I'm spending so much on it.
I know, and it's really expensive. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I don't know what I'm going to do with this noise here. Hold on a second. It's making me crazy. I don't know if it's just the headphones or what's going on. But why does this have to happen in mid-show?
There we
go. Yeah, but why does this have to happen in mid-show? I don't know.
Hopefully, there we go. We're good. Hopefully, it'll stay.
Yeah, hopefully it'll stay.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but sometimes it happens. No, it's going on again. It's happening. It's going from one ear to the other,
right? Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh, man, why? Why do I have to deal with this every day? And it's not just this. I mean, there's so much technology that doesn't work or stops working.
Yeah.
And it stresses me out to no end, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
There's so much to deal with.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, the technology is just so, I mean, looking at the board that you use is overwhelming just to look at.
Right. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff here, but we really just turn on the mics on and off. It's not really that bad.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, the connection, sometimes just things get loose or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or they just stop working, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's like every day I get so much stress from things that don't work.
Yeah.
You know, you get on your computer, you do this, doesn't work. You do that, it doesn't work. You go in circles, you chase your tail, and it gets pretty upsetting after a while for me.
Yeah, definitely, I can imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, so much for technology. My motto is, it always works except when it doesn't.
You know? Which is true.
Yeah. Always works my ass, you know. Yeah. No, it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Today, November 7th, it marks the 25th anniversary of the Berlin Wall fall. It fell in 1989, and that was really at the heart of the collapse
The Berlin Wall?
Yeah, the Berlin Wall. Well, we'll get back to that later because the guest is calling in. I don't know why his name is programmed in here. This is weird. Yeah. Good morning. You're reaching our show. This is Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Is this Guy?
This is Guy. Hi, Sam.
Hi, good morning, Guy. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good. We're talking to Guy Blues, and you're the author of How Angels Die, A Confession.
Correct.
Before we get to the book, where are you calling us from today?
I'm calling from Malibu, California.
Oh, wow.
You have a nice English accent, though, I can tell.
Really? It sounds English? I was born and raised in Alabama.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought
no,
I read that you were from
England. Just kidding.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought I read that you were from England, too.
No, he's kidding. Come on.
Sorry, being a joker. Yes, I'm an Englishman. I'm actually now a U.S. citizen, proudly.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. It's very exciting to become an American citizen, I know. And
yes, it is.
Yeah, so congratulations to you. And you sure know how to pick a place to be. Malibu is an amazing place.
Yeah.
So that is very cool.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So
once you've been to England, you won't settle for anything less.
That's true, huh? Guy, are you... So you're an author. Is this your profession? Are you an author or do you do other things as well?
No, my profession now is an author. I'm a certified life coach, so I've had clients where I life coach them in what I call the Holy Trinity of Success, which is their physical, their financial, and their emotional balance.
Uh-huh.
So I've written books about that sort of stuff, but How Angels Die is just the first book I've written about a personal experience. Probably be the only book I'll ever write about a personal experience. Mm-hmm. And it was such a powerful subject to me and such an interesting subject to me. I went through, you know, a horrendous experience, but I've tried to make it a positive read and an interesting read. Although it's devastating, it's also enlightening. And I just decided once the story's basically about my girlfriend became my wife and she had MS, and it started off quite mildly and then it got very aggressive very quickly. And she asked me to help her die.
Wow.
And I was left to realize that if I helped her, I was going to lose her, and if I didn't help her, then I would lose her because she wouldn't be able to feel completely comfortable around me. And so really, How Angels Die is that story. It's the confession of what we went through and how we confronted that horrendous situation. My wife was very young. She was 37 when she died. Oh, I'm sorry, she was 34 when she died. I was 37. But it was it's just something that everybody will have to confront at some stage in their lives, whether it's a parent getting to the stage, or an aunt, a child. You know, it could happen to all of us, and it probably will happen to most of us because, you know, I mean, I had a great aunt who was 99 when she died, and she asked my mum, please just help me die. I don't want to be here anymore. Right. And my mother wasn't allowed to, you know, and the doctors wouldn't help her. And so it's a thing that we're all going to probably have to confront because we're living for such a long time and we have medicine that enables us to stay alive.
That's
but for
true.
Some people, the quality of life isn't really, worth it for them. And the other people want to struggle and some people don't. And I think this book, you know, How Angels Die, just brings up that question and gives a what you'll have to do if we don't have the right to help somebody die in a dignified way.
Where were you living at the time? Because obviously it's become a huge, become very knowledgeable. People know about it now, especially after the Brittany Maynard situation that has gone, global.
Right. And they used to have...
Correct. Well, I mean...
Remember they used to have the death doctor also, what was his name? And he was...
was it Kevorkian or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, Kevorkian, that's right, yes. And I think that was like the first time it was introduced here in the States, that dilemma of helping people die, and they call him Dr. Death, you know.
Wow.
So, but that's...
And of course, the thing was that he was doing what they wanted him to do, but of course the media grab it and take it as something so negative.
Right.
When, you know, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, we're all going to die. And it's just a question, I think it then comes down to the point of how you die. Do you die under your own terms? Or do you die in a way that other people think you should die? I mean, Gemma, who is my wife the book's all about, we used to often talk about how we're told you can't play God with human life when it comes to death, but you play God with human life when you're a child. You fill me with vaccines that keep me alive for longer than I should be, so why can't I then make that decision at the end of my life of how I want to do it?
That's right,
I think
yeah.
The thing about How Angels Die that makes it very interesting is MS is not counted as a terminal illness. you know, multiple sclerosis is an illness that it devastates your body, and it's different for every single person. For some people, they can continue to live quite normally with MS. Other people, it devastates so badly that they are literally encaged in a body that they can't control. Their mind works, but their body doesn't. And Gemma felt very strongly that she was getting to the stage where what she said, I'm just going to become a burden, and I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
And that's where I understood what she was going through. I'd had a brother who had had a terminal illness that was it wasted his whole body, and I watched what it did to him. I mean, we had to feed him through a tube. He became skin and bone, and then he just wasted away at the age of 12.
Oh, wow.
From the age of 4. So I watched 8 years of this going on when I was a child. So when Gemma then was confronted with this, it was a decision that I had to make for her more than even for myself. It was just something that I knew if I didn't help her, I would never forgive myself, and she would never forgive me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brittany Maynard, she had a terminal illness. So it's one of those things where when it's a terminal illness, it's a lot easier to say, yes, we'll help you die with dignity. But when it's an illness that just devastates your body and doesn't necessarily kill you,
right,
obviously in the long run you're going to die, but it doesn't actually kill you, what does it do to the people around you? What does it do for your memory? I mean, I think most of us, when we die, would like people to remember us as being a healthy, vibrant, happy person.
Yes.
And a lot of these illnesses, they don't kill you, but they take away who you are. They take away your body. They take away your mind. They take away how you feel about life. They can make you extremely depressed. And I think that, you know, this book confronts that question. What do you do with somebody who says to you, I want to die, but it's against the law to actually help them because their illness is not terminal?
Right.
You know, I think it's a really big, it's a massive question. And like I said earlier, we're all going to be confronted with it on some level, whether it's friends, family.
Yeah, quite a moral dilemma. I mean, to, you know, to live with something like that and have to make that decision. So now, did you have to give an okay here, or was that pretty much her, if she just gives a consent, then it can be done? How does it work?
Well, with Gemma, she basically, you know, the doctors felt that she wasn't terminally ill. So, and obviously living in California, it's not legal to have death with dignity, or the right to die is not legal here. It's legal, obviously, in Oregon and Washington.
Okay.
And with Gemma, she actually ended up, she tried to do it with sleeping pills, and she ended up having to do it with a handgun, because she just got to the stage where the sleeping pills didn't work, and she got to the stage where she felt that if she didn't do it soon, she wouldn't have the strength to do it, and then she would be encaged in this dilemma of being basically what she called a vegetable,
right,
stuck in a body with a mind that worked, and feel, you know, with the pity and the inability to be able to do anything, and people pitying her, and she couldn't handle that. And
right,
again, a lot of people would say, oh, you commit suicide, that's a weak decision. But in the book, I sort of throw out that actually it's the bravest decision of the lot.
Yes.
You know,
right,
it's very, very hard. You know, and I had to say goodbye to her 4 times before she actually succeeded. It was a horrendous thing to go through.
Wow.
Although, you know, I kind of handled it the best I could. And in the book, it doesn't come across as depressing. It comes across as shocking, maybe, but not necessarily depressing.
Right.
But, you know, she tried 4 times. It's very, you know, a human body doesn't want to die.
Right.
You know, so no matter what you do, there's, you know, there's only a certain number of things you can do that are absolute certainties, and most of those you can't get a hold of. You know, the one thing which is certain is a gun, obviously,
right,
but a lot of the pills that are prescription medications, they're not easy to, you know, many people survive through
right
suicide. I mean, I remember Gemma was researching it a lot, and there were people who put plastic bags over their heads and tied them, and then tied their hands behind their back, and they woke up 3 hours later with the bag and the ties all neatly powered up in the corner, and they'd in their unconscious mind saved themselves, even
right
though they wanted to die in their conscious mind.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's a very, it's crazy sort of subject to broach. And you know, like you were saying before, the whole Brittany Maynard thing has sort of brought it very much into the public eye and in the forefront of people's minds. But it's one of those things that I think it's like anything. Until you actually have to confront it, you don't really have an opinion on it. You're
That's
like, oh,
true.
Well, I wouldn't do it. And then suddenly you have to do it. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, or I think people do have opinions about it, and it's pretty controversial and stuff. You know, I mean, the thing is that many people feel that we're here on this earth to go through the suffering and everything, and you know, but that's on a spiritual level, and it's easy to criticize someone. I wanted to ask you though. I mean, we're talking about assisted suicide, but you said she took it upon herself, so there was nobody assisting her, was there?
Well, I mean, I obviously can't go into it too deeply exactly what I did, but right. She was, by the time she actually died, she was not capable of really loading a gun or of to begin with. The time she tried with pills, and so I had to go and get the pills for her. Uh-huh. And when she tried the first time with a gun, the gun jammed. You know, so I had sort of. Be there. You know, she had to call me and say it didn't work. Can you come back? And I had to come back, and I had to deal with the gun. So I was assisting her in the sense that I was supporting her decision for herself.
Right.
Now, you know, I've obviously spoken to a lot of lawyers about this, and it's one of those very. It's right on the knife edge of is it illegal to sort of. I guess support is the word. Support somebody's personal decision.
Right.
It could be taken as that, and it could be that somebody might think it was the wrong thing to do. But I think legally, I was within the boundaries. But I had to assist her, not just like assist her by giving her the pills, but right. assist her emotionally to go through that horrendous situation where she's sitting there going, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Right. No, I can't do it tomorrow. I'm going to do it on Saturday. But remember Brittany Maynard? She had decided she was going to do it on November the 1st, and then she said, I'm not going to do it on November the 1st, and then she did do it on November the 1st. It's one of those, yeah. You know, when it... I mean, that's one of the interesting things about this whole Oregon law is they give people these pills. I think 1,500 people have asked to have the pill that will end their life, and only 700 and something have used it. So half the people who've been given the pill and decided, I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to do it myself, have actually got to the point of swallowing the pill and gone, I can't do this.
Right.
You know, you get, because maybe just one more day, just one more day, just one more hour, I'll just wait. So it's like the assisted suicide part of this book is that I assisted her to overcome the barriers that she confronted with deciding to do it, and the barriers of when it actually failed, when she had decided to do it.
Yeah.
This is very, it's extremely, I'm getting emotional just listening to you hear you speak about this. How did you deal with this situation?
I know, I think, do you know what, to be honest with you, I think writing the book really helped me. My mother actually is a bereavement counselor, so I was lucky on that sense. After my brother died, she became a bereavement counselor. She'd been through something, you know, we all know that nature doesn't make children die before parents in the natural order of things, but when it happens, it's the most devastating thing that can happen to a parent is to lose their child. So my mother became a bereavement counselor. She'd had personal experience of something really horrendous with my brother. And she just said to me, you know, a lot of the time it helps, you know, knowing that I was a writer, she said, maybe you should just write it down. And originally I wrote it down just to kind of clear my mind and process it. Obviously, after Gemma died, I was a wreck. I was, you know, I couldn't breathe properly for about 3 months. I would just burst into tears with no apparent reason. But a lot of the time I told myself, when I cry, I'm closer to her, and that's okay. It's okay to cry and let it out, because guess what? You're closer to her, and you feel that there's a better connection. It's almost when you stop crying is when you start feeling guilty. Like, oh, I didn't think about it for 2 hours. I feel bad about that. But you have to just forgive yourself the whole time and process it. So I wrote the book, and originally I wrote it, and I told a friend of mine about what had happened. And he had said to me, can I read the book? And I said, sure. And it was about 100 pages, and I gave it to him. And he was literally, like, couldn't cope with it. He freaked out completely. Like, oh, my God, I got to make a movie out of this. He was an actor. Randall Battenkoff is his name, and he's an actor. And he said, I want to make this my first directorial movie. I want to do this as a movie. And I said, sure, if you want to work it through, we work it through, we can. And I think for me it was nice to have that support and to feel that somebody else felt that it was an important thing to just put out there. I never really intended to get the book published, but after he had read it and had that reaction, I got it published, and I think that has helped me, the process of making it feel like it was something that Gemma's life meant something, that it's actually getting a message out there, that people are going to see that not everything in life is black and white. You know, there's a lot of gray in there where we are put in situations, and it's amazing what you can handle. I think the only reason I could handle it initially when Gemma told me she wanted to do it was because I'd seen my brother go through what he went through, and so I'd had personal experience of dealing with something that, most people haven't dealt with. You know, watching your brother waste away and become a like skin and bone and not be able to see or eat or anything. It made it hardened me, obviously, but it also gave me compassion, and I think that it helped me see that I could help Gemma come out the other side of this, at least the way she wanted to, not the way the disease wanted her to go.
Right.
Yeah, and the book was made into a movie. How was that? What, because it premiered in August, right? How was that?
Correct.
Watching.
Yeah.
The movie.
Well, I mean, the process was hard. You know, I originally wrote the screenplay with Randall, and the thing I actually haven't mentioned is when I was very young and I watched my brother die, I decided I didn't want to get old. I said, you know what, I'm not going to get old. And I'd seen my father was about 40, and to me, he was an old man. He was unfit. He would get up in the morning and, you know, sort of struggle out of bed, and just had a bad back. And it was, I just felt like he was an old man. So I said to myself, by the time I'm 37, I'm going to kill myself. I'm not going to go through this.
Yeah.
Don't want to go through old age. And 37 was that kind of age where I felt I've got enough time to achieve everything I want to achieve. I'm going out on top, and I'm not going to deteriorate. Of course, now I'm 47, and I've still got a tattoo that says 37 on my arm.
Yeah.
So Randall was kind of very intrigued by that when he first met me. And then when Gemma died, and of course I was 37 at the time she died, he was really grabbed onto that whole sort of suicide part of the movie. When I wrote the movie, I wrote it very much as it happened, like the real story. But he felt that that wasn't quite right for a movie. You need to be much more visual. So he introduced some elements that I thought were very clever. Like he made, in the movie, my brother is sort of like a ghost, an apparition that appears to him. Because obviously my brother's death had a huge effect on me and made me realize how fragile and unimportant human life can be.
Right.
And so he sort of brought my brother in as this apparition that's haunting him throughout his life. And that's why he wants to die at 37. The main character wants to die at 37. And then he meets this girl, Gemma, who he falls in love with. And she inspires him to grab onto life and to live. And she says, just live for me and live for my life.
Right.
So the movie, it kind of takes the three basic elements of the, which are suicide, my brother's death, and Gemma's death, and turns it into this amazing love story.
Oh, wow.
That kind of it's uplifting, I guess, although it's a really hard subject because, you know, obviously you see Gemma die, and that's a really hard thing to see on camera. Although they did it with injection instead of with a gun, it's, you know, and the lead actor is with her at the time. I wasn't actually with Gemma when she did it, but he's right there. It's an incredibly powerful. I mean, Randall and Scotty do an amazing job of portraying the emotions that go along with ending a life, and him not wanting to but wanting to help her and being so in love with her, and she so desperate to die and wanting him to see it as a positive thing and not a negative thing.
Right.
So I mean, it was and going through the film, I remember when I watched the scene with Scotty and Randall when she dies, that was heavy. Even though it was nothing like the way Gemma died, it was very heavy to watch, and, you know, very emotional, and she does an amazing job of that scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, therapeutic in a weird way, and also kind of jarring in another way. You know, shockingly jarring when you really think about what it meant to have a movie made about someone's life and about a book that I'd written. It was, you know, it was inspiring.
Well, at least you turned something pretty, you know, pretty tragic into something where people can actually learn from it and experience this and maybe help them with their decisions in their own lives what to do. So we're talking to Guy Blues. The book is How Angels Die, A Confession, and the movie made out of it was 37, A Final Promise. Where can we watch this movie?
I think it's on all of the major networks. I think on all of the cable channels you can get it. I don't think it's on Netflix yet, although it probably will be. But I think if you've got any cable channels that do movies, it'll be on there.
Oh, wow. Very awesome. Cool. So we'll look for it, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Guy, you've been through a lot, and, you know, we salute you for still, you know, having the will to live after being through all this. And, of course, you know, the issue of suicide is a lot deeper than this, because we know it's a tragedy when people that are not terminally ill still commit suicide and stuff. And I think that's why this creates a lot of controversy and stuff. And but I'm glad at least you're okay with yourself, you know, and you feel you did the right thing. And, you know, from my perspective, you did too. You know, I mean, I think when you can help someone like this and you see them suffer like this, it's hard to judge someone else, you know, unless you've been in that situation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, it's you know, and I hope anyone who reads the book sees it as a positive thing. And although it is shocking, which any good book should be, you know, it does make you think, and it is. But ultimately, you know, it is a love story, and it is a positive view of you know, the best way to cope with terrible situations in life, I guess.
Very cool. And do you happen to have a website to cover the movie and the book, or should we just go and check it out on Amazon?
I think you can go to Facebook for 37 A Final Promise, and you can go to Guy Blues, which is GUYBLEWS.com is where you can find more stuff about me in the book, or you just get the book on Amazon.com.
Sounds great.
Great.
Yeah. Guy, thank you so much for joining us this morning. This is a fascinating story. And, you know, I feel the pain as much as possible just from hearing the story. And it's, you know, I mean, you're a survivor, you know. It's a big dilemma to deal with these things. And you somehow found your way through it, you know. And so we admire you for that.
Definitely.
Guy Blues.
Thank you, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Guy, and all the best to you. Much success with the book and the movie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Heavy stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Really heavy. Wow.
I know. It's like, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, there's so many moral dilemmas when it comes to that, you know, because you have to ask yourself, you know, I mean, are we permitted to take a life, you know? And the question is, whose permission do we need? Obviously, if you believe in God and you're a religious person, you probably would not do it. You know, you probably think, well, this is what your journey is. This is what you have to deal with, blah, blah, blah.
Right, but it's your life, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think you should be able to decide for yourself.
Definitely.
What you do. But it's such a sad thing, you know? I mean, God, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to other things. We started talking about the Berlin Wall, and that's why I wanted to.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this up. The Soviet bloc fell in 1989. Before that, what happened is after World War II, Europe was sort of like divided between the Russians and the Allies.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians. They or the Soviets at the time, they decided to partition. They partitioned Berlin, which was the capital of Germany. So there was West Berlin and East Berlin, and East Berlin was part of the Soviet Union. So the Berlin Wall was a symbol of the you know, of the differences between the cultures and everything, you know, and the constant struggle and the Cold War. And, you know, I mean, you couldn't go in or out into Berlin and other countries in the Soviet bloc back then. So this symbolized, you know, like a big deal. You know, Berlin was reunited.
Mm-hmm.
Germany became a Western country again. And so this is a reason for celebration, you know. And I remember, I mean, Ronald Reagan said to Gorbachev, break down this wall, you know, tear down this wall.
Is it a day that they celebrate in Germany?
I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe they do. I don't know. But it sure reunified the city and the country in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Brandenburg Gate.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know. The Brandenburg Gate was where you could get through the wall from one side to the other, but very few people did. People were like infiltrating and sneaking out, you know, as you can imagine.
To go to the other side,
to go to the western side.
Yeah.
So so we're marking this today, but like I said, it's more than just the Berlin Wall. It's the whole of the end of the Cold War, pretty much, which lasted for many years. An ex-Baltimore Ravens cheerleader was arrested and charged with rape. And obviously women can't really rape men, but they can have statutory rape. And that's, I guess, what it is. She's 47 years old, and she turned herself in after authorities arraigned her on charges of third-degree rape, unlawful sexual contact, and providing alcohol to minors. So she's had sex more than once, I guess, with a 15-year-old boy. In the neighborhood and stuff, and in her vacation home.
And obviously provided him with alcohol.
Yeah.
Is she married?
She was going through a divorce, I guess.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's not good.
I know. She was a cheerleader, but I guess that doesn't really matter.
Must have been a long time ago.
Yeah, it is a long time ago.
Yeah.
They said she's the oldest one.
Yeah.
The oldest cheerleader in the NFL. So I guess she's still a cheerleader there, right? I mean, if they're saying she's the oldest.
I don't know, 47 seems really old to be.
It does, huh?
It was the Ravens?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, how can you possibly cheerleading stuff at 47? But she must. I don't know.
Yeah. You know. Hmm. Yeah, there's pictures of her.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, there's no picture here. There's just a video that I can't see. But it's so she turned herself in, and you know, I mean, this happens quite a bit, you know, and you have to wonder, you know, I mean, men do this a lot. I guess women can too, not that it's legal or anything, but we shouldn't be surprised when this happens, you know, because people, I think it's more than about sex. I think maybe it's about power, it's about control, because a teenager doesn't really have the ability to consent yet. You know, they don't know the whole story. So that's what happens.
She definitely doesn't look. Oh, she's an ex.
She's an ex cheerleader?
She's an ex cheerleader.
Okay.
I was going to say, these photos, she doesn't look 47.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, I'm reading in the headline, ex Baltimore Ravens cheerleader. So why would they say she's the oldest? I mean, unless she was still a cheerleader. Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's a lot of cheerleaders that were young and other older.
True. You know? I don't know.
What the hell? So I don't understand that, but, you know.
Johannesburg in South Africa is going to retain the title of Africa's most visited city for the second year in a row.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's the only decent place in Africa.
I was about to say, Johannesburg is probably one of the only places that I could name.
Yeah.
Where else is there that people go to?
Oh, well, Mozambique, Zambia, Nigeria. But Johannesburg is like a Western.
Developed and.
Yeah,
right?
It's totally
really
Western.
Really developed, yeah.
Yeah. They're saying it's the biggest concentration of wealth in Africa is right there.
Oh, wow.
In Johannesburg. Yeah.
Interesting.
There's a lot of rich people there, for sure. But what kind of life is it when you have so much violence, you know, and the thing is that the problem is they still have a lot of violence there. And I thought, well, maybe it would go away in a few years because I lived there in 97. And so you're talking 20, you know, almost 20 years ago, and the violence was rampant then. And I thought, well, surely, you know, within 10 years or something, after people sort of forget about apartheid, that things would be different.
Right.
But I guess there's still that big disparity in wealth there that, you know, you have a lot of poor
rich
people.
Rich and a lot of poor, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of poor people robbing the rich. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, not a very safe place.
But Johannesburg is a beautiful place. You know, if anybody gets a chance to go there, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah, I'd like to go.
Cape Town is even nicer. So we took a trip with a few friends driving down to Cape Town. It was one of the most memorable trips I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah, it was amazing. We drove through the garden route and desert and everything. I mean,
wow.
It was incredible. And we encountered a pack of baboons off the side of the road. So we pulled over, and roll up the windows because they're dangerous. Mm-hmm. And they started climbing the car, you know.
Wow.
All over the car on the windshield and everything. So you see them almost like face to face. You can almost kiss them.
Wow, that's cool.
It
are
is.
Are they strong? Like, could they have punched through the
they
window?
They are. No, not through the window. But they're, you know, you don't want to fight one. You
yeah.
know? You don't want to fight any wild animal. I mean, they're, you know, they've got their tactics that you can't really beat. You know?
As the group of people, the guy that got mauled by the group of five bears
yeah.
realized.
I know. Don't yeah. be in the wild. Right?
Yeah.
Don't piss an animal off. So, yeah. So, that's what we did. And they just climbed the car and we took pictures and stuff.
Wow.
It was really cool.
So, it sounds it.
Yeah. So, that was my part of my adventure in Cape Town.
Wow.
And it's also cool because you can go there. You go to the Cape, which is the southernmost point in Africa, and you can see where the well, you can't see. There's not really a line, but that's where the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean meet.
Very cool.
Yeah. So it's...
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a neat place to be.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah. You know, I guess the army is going through some controversy now because they were defending using the word Negro in their documentation and stuff. And so they're apologizing for this. They're saying the army should remove the outdated language because it is outdated, you know. I mean, today we refer to blacks or African Americans, but, you know, they're saying terms such as Haitian or Negro shouldn't be used anymore. And, you know, I can understand, you know, I mean, this
yeah.
was still during the times when they used a lot of, there was a lot of racial tension and things like that. Not that there isn't any now, but there was a lot more now, and I guess they want to do away with that. So that's pretty controversial. But
yeah,
definitely. But they definitely should go along with it and not fight this.
I agree.
Know? Yeah.
I agree. There was a woman murdered in Wales by an act of cannibalism.
Wow.
Yeah. Yikes.
Oh, God.
I didn't realize that stuff was actually real.
Yeah.
You know, I watch Hannibal Lecter and you watch the movies, but... And it was her... She was in a relationship. It was her boyfriend. And then he was tasered by the police because the police had been called because an argument was happening and they were staying in a hotel. Or it was... It's known as a hotel, but it's a hostel for homeless people. And when the police got here, that obviously... Whatever they saw, and they tasered the man, but the man died.
Really?
They don't know if it's from being tasered, but I mean,
yeah.
that was all they did to him. but it was from he killed it through cannibalism.
Wow, I remember we used to have one here in America. His name was Jeffrey Dahmer, and that was some time ago. But he was a cannibalist also, and they found body parts in his house and the freezer
that's just
and
like...
stuff. I know. People are extremely sick,
yeah.
And these are the people that should commit suicide. You know?
Yeah, right.
We don't need them here.
Yikes! That's just, that's awful. Just awful.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that existed. It was better before I read that story.
I know. I know. There was a very brutal story here. I decided not to tell because it's pretty brutal, and they describe what they did to someone, and I. Don't think we want to talk about that.
Yeah, a little bit too much for a Friday.
Yeah.
For a happy Friday.
Too much information, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, here's that cheerleader. Yeah, she looks 47. Yeah. Yeah. There's still a lot going on and stuff, but we mentioned the AC/DC drummer yesterday that was arrested, right?
Mm-hmm.
For planning to murder a couple of people. But the charges were dropped on that.
Huh, that was quick.
Yeah, the charges of attempting to procure murder was dropped, but they're saying there's still a charge of...
marijuana.
Well, they do have that and stuff, but also threatening to kill, which is, you know, I guess pretty serious too.
Yeah.
But the drug charges are pretty minor. He's probably going to get away with that. You know, so, but it just goes to show you, you know, I mean, we're always too quick to judge people based on what the media tells us, what the police tells us. But we got to remember, until somebody's has had their time in court, they're not guilty.
Innocent until proved guilty.
And that's what we pride ourselves in. But this is in New Zealand, so they might do things differently there.
So,
that's that. Good news. I guess the unemployment is really lower than it's been in many years, since 1999.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not. So that's pretty good. 5.8% of unemployment. I mean, I remember at the worst of the recession that we had, it was up to 9%,
wow.
You know, which was a lot. I mean, that was like, duh, it's almost a depression.
Yeah.
But now things are looking up. 2.3 million jobs were added this year.
Wow.
So, and I can feel that people are feeling better spending money and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
They're feeling a little more, less tight in spending money.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that's it. And I guess we are at the end of the show. I totally didn't even notice.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Time flies. thank you for Guy Blues for calling in and discussing the assisted suicide with us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, Charlotte. Have a great Friday.
You too.
Great weekend. Thanks, everybody. See you on Monday.
The best in morning radio. Tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.